Evidently, workers at video stores would often say that the rental copies would start flickering during scene due to having been paused at that topless moment so many times.
I love that.
I'm sure there are a lot of people of nodding course. In agreement.
Yes.
Males and females.
Hello world, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the Big Wheel generation who saved their babysitting money, which was actual money, like dimes and quarters, in a ceramic animal-shaped piggy bank with a plug in the bottom.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we're saving the 1982 movie that made us all think differently about eating carrots in the cafeteria. Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists. Today, we're taking you all back to the early 80s, a time of big hair, neon colors, and a whole lot of attitude. But beneath the surface of this decade of excess, there was a darker undercurrent seeping into our cinemas. We're talking about the teensploitation films of the early 80s, folks, those exploitation movies starring teenagers that promised thrills, chills, and a whole lot of boobs. All caps, B-O-O-B-S.
That we can make on a calculator.
That's correct. 8005. Actually, or you did 58008 and turned it upside down. Right. And believe it or not, one of the most iconic films of the era actually managed to subvert the genre while still embracing its spirit. At Ridgemont High is considered one of three of these types of films that were released in 1982. And we're going to talk about if we think that's a fair inclusion in just a minute. The year started with the wide release of Porky's. Oh, Jesus Christ. July brought us The Last American Virgin. Did you guys see that?
Mm-mm.
No.
No, I don't remember that either. I read the synopsis and I was like, yep, sounds about right for 82. And then Fast Times was released in August. Then after 1982, these movies came fast and furiously. There were Screwballs, Losing It, Joysticks, Porky's 2, Revenge of the Nerds, and so many more. What do you remember about these types of movies becoming a thing?
I was scared of these movies.
Completely.
I did not ask to see them. I was absolutely not attracted to them. The Stein girls told me all about them. So I knew the plots of all of them. I knew all about them, but I never wanted to go see them. I still haven't seen Porky's. I still haven't seen Revenge of the Nerds. I didn't see that one you just mentioned. I think they just weren't my kind of shenanigans.
Mm-mm. We should have had the Stein girls on as special guests of this episode.
I know, we really should.
They would have been perfect. Mm-hmm. Well, I remember seeing Porky's and definitely saw Fast Times at Ridgemont High in the movie theater, double date. I probably saw it more than once, ooh, I'm guessing. Yeah, I know.
Ooh, because remember, I know about this.
Remember, I am older than you guys. I'm the oldest end of Gen X. And so I was going into my senior year of high school. This was the summer before my senior year. So basically what I'm seeing on the screen is reflecting exactly the point I am in life. And so definitely saw Fast Times, Double Date. And then the other movies you mentioned, I think, no.
And what you said, Kristen, is exactly what the first thing that came to my mind is that I was terrified of these movies.
Yeah, I was scared.
Don't forget, I'm just turning 13 in 1982. I was too young for all that flesh and all those situations, but I saw several of them. And so I'm wondering, where was my mother? How was I allowed to watch these? And I think it was at sleepovers and things like that. But because watching Porky's multiple times scarred me so badly as a young 13-year-old. As you guys know, I have requested we never devote an episode to it here. I don't need to see that movie ever again in my life.
Clearly, I don't care.
Scenes of that movie
still, and I'm not going to,
are burned on the back of my eyelids. And like, I can't get them out of my head. But Fast Times, I loved. And I do remember being shocked and scared by most of it. And I do think that's because I was just 13 years old, which is the same age I find out Linda, Phoebe Cates, was when she lost her virginity. She tells
that. Yes, that's right.
But also, it amplified my insecurities at that age about boys and all the things I thought I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
When I got to high school, and we were watching it last week in preparation for this episode, and it's one of my husband's favorite movies. He can quote like the whole thing. And I asked, I was saying that out loud to him, like, God, this scared me. Like I felt even more insecure watching it. And he's like, oh, same. But at the same time, I loved it. I looked up to those girls. I looked up to Stacey and Linda. I thought it was hilarious. And even at 13, I got that it was heartbreaking.
I did not feel the same about the Porky's movies as I did about Fast Times. I loved it, and I was not afraid of Fast Times because for some reason I did not clue into the fact that Stacy was my age. I thought these people were all so far ahead of me that that part didn't really scare me. I didn't think it applied to me yet. And also, a lot of it just went right over my head because this was my 15th birthday party.
Oh, my goodness. Going, oh, that's a great 15th birthday party,
it,
actually.
Well, if you got to see it, because I bring my whole birthday party to the Village 4 Theater in Coon Rapids, Minnesota, and we're standing in line, and suddenly, for the first time, Gordy and Linda figure out that this is a rated R movie, and they refuse to buy the tickets. They refuse to buy the tickets. I'm like, it's my birthday, and we're all here. We're in line. And I still don't know. I have been racking my brain. I have gone down so many rabbit holes trying to figure out what we saw instead. I have no memory of it. The only memory that I have is of them saying, no, this is rated R. We cannot watch it. So that's very tragic. On the other hand, think about if they had said yes. I would have seen Fast Times with my parents.
Yeah, no.
That's not survivable. Yeah. No. That's not survivable. And my parents would have been...
Well, they probably would have taken you out during
That's true. If they the Carols would have come out and they would have, you're right.
That's like Carolyn having to see Little Darlings with her mom in the theater.
Yeah. Yeah. Yikes. I'm sure I saw it a few days later with the Stein Girls or something.
Well, here's something wonderfully interesting. And most likely the reason I loved Fast Times but had that weird bug to the light thing with Porky's, in stark contrast to the Porky's types of movies that really are all about the male characters with the females being weak sexual objects, Fast Times is told through the eyes of females, and it's the females who get retribution. That's so far different than a Porky's type movie.
Yeah.
So to ask you guys the question I brought up earlier, do you think it's fair to include Fast Times in these lists of teensploitation movies, or is Fast Times simply a coming-of-age movie?
I feel so strongly about this. This is not a teensploitation flick.
Correct.
This is a coming-of-age movie.
I
never put this in the same category as Porky's. And I think you nailed it with the reason why. Those movies were so male-focused. That's why they were so dumb, right? That's why they were so prank-oriented. This was not a prank-oriented movie. And we have the point of view of Linda and Stacy. It was less exploitation slash sensationalized teen shenanigans and more an unveiling of teen life.
For
with
sure.
Very memorable comedic lines.
And with very real feelings. And very real scenarios.
And
of
consequences.
High school life.
Yes. Right? But it is a coming of age story for every single character.
Yes.
Stacy, Rat, Brad, Damone, even Linda has a moment of growth. Even Spicoli has a moment of growth at the end of the film. This is 100% a coming of age movie.
I totally agree. It's not, you know, the two words that immediately come to mind with those other types of movies are crude and gratuitous.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I don't feel, like I said earlier, I think, you know, it might share some characteristics, just like there's boobs, there's, you know, sex, but it's not crude or gratuitous, right? It managed to capture, I feel like Fast Times managed to capture the teenage experience with honesty that, let's think about it, was pretty groundbreaking at the time of when all these movies were out there, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I understand why people liked them. I totally get that, particularly if you're a boy between the ages of 12 and 18. I understand why you liked it, but it is different.
Oh, there's a place for them in cinematic history, right?
Yeah.
Because it's very a reflection of the types of movies they were cranking out and that were making money. Well, the female lens and the fun retribution, so fun, of Fast Times, it's almost certainly thanks to its director. And that was Amy Heckerling. That's a name definitely familiar to Gen Xers. While Fast Times was her directorial debut, she went on to direct such Gen X notables like Johnny Dangerously. You guys, I forgot about that movie and that cast. Michael Keaton, Joe Piscopo, Mary Lou Henner, among a list of others. Look Who's Talking, Look Who's Talking Too. Think what you will about them, but they were successful.
I loved them.
I know. I did too. Okay, I'm glad you said that because I did too.
Okay,
I did too.
Good.
And Clueless, oh my gosh, iconic, right? And her TV work, her
Angel
TV
singing.
Work includes the very short-lived Fast Times series as well. I didn't know about this, the more you know, as well as episodes of The Office, Gossip Girl, The Carrie Diaries, and a cute Amazon Prime series I loved that was called Red Oaks. I don't know if
that
you guys
makes.
Watched
I did
that.
Not know that was her, and that
not
tracks.
At all.
That is on brand.
Mm-hmm.
That is on brand. And did you guys know that this movie was based on a book?
Not until last week.
me too. Not until last week. True story. At just 24 years old, after almost a decade of famously writing for Rolling Stone magazine, which we all learned about from his quasi-autobiographical movie, Almost Famous, Cameron Crowe published his first and only novel called Fast Times at Ridgemont High, A True Story. So why is a true story included in the title? Because in 1979, a 22-year-old Cameron Crowe went undercover posing as a high school senior at Claremont High School in San Diego, California, in order to write an expose on teen life. This is what you just said, Michelle. He wanted to do this because he was frustrated with the way the media portrayed teens as sort of like this nameless, faceless mob without ever giving them a chance to speak for themselves. In other words, he felt like, well, parents just don't understand. And that's what you just said, Michelle. Like, this was showing teenagers as they really are in the wild. So he claims that these characters in Fast Times actually existed, although he changed all of their names.
I got goosebumps.
I know. And that all of these things actually happened. A lot actually of sources dispute that. But the book was never marketed as nonfiction. It was always marketed as a novel. But it says a true story right in the title. But still, I am going with the idea that someone out there today is Stacy. Stacy's out there, and she knows it.
And I read that the character Mark
Rat
grew up to be kind of a computer guru, so he kind of stayed kind of stereotypical.
Nice.
And he wrote a lot of the For Dummies books that had to do with like Microsoft stuff and computer stuff.
So they really are.
Yes. Once again, Carolyn come in clutch with the greatest
fun little fact.
So before the book was published, before it was released, he had already sold the film rights. The book was published in September of 1981. They started filming the movie just 2 months later, with 24-year-old Cameron Crowe as its screenwriter and right-hand man to Amy Heckerling, and the movie was released just 11 months after the book.
Wow.
Wow. But let's not lose sight of the fact that he was 22 when he did that. What did we say when he wrote the book? Like
24 when the book was released.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we're talking 24, 25 when they're doing this movie. Amy was, what was she? She was just in
26.
Her.
26. Okay. She was 26 years
what?
Old.
I mean,
they're
these
children.
Are like our kids.
I know.
That in and of itself is pretty wild and crazy that they're not much older than these people they're directing.
No,
and
that's true.
They're kind of all kids. But
they're
probably
all kids.
Helped. They weren't that far out of these scenarios of
they're
know, these
a handful
feelings.
Of years away
right.
from what teenagers are actually feeling. There is no way that that didn't affect the authenticity of this film, and that's why we all attach to it so hard is because of its authenticity.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, exactly, and I think that's what the cast brings to it as well. So let's chat a little bit about the cast. Why don't we? Because it's a pretty iconic cast. But it's interesting that there's really not a Brat Packer in the bunch.
Yes. It's like it was right on the cusp of the Brat Pack era. It was when the Brat Pack was being seeded with the Outsiders. We didn't have a name for them yet, but all of these movies were seeding these individuals, right?
Well, that's an interesting take, although I would say that it's a different animal, the people that are cast in this movie. They're not pretty. Like, I would say a lot
That's
of the
right,
Brat Pack
real.
People are pretty. Yes, mm-hmm, they're super mm-hmm. relatable.
Well, other than Phoebe Cates, you're completely right.
And she had
I never
to
really
be that way.
About that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Phoebe Cates had to be the one beautiful person. You couldn't have more than one beautiful
right.
person.
Everybody was attainable. You knew those people that were in the movie but in terms of their characters.
Yeah.
And so I think it was cast perfectly, and Brat Packers would have made it, it wouldn't have seemed as real as it did to all of us had it been, you know, Rob Lowe being, what was he going to be, Brad or something?
Right.
Please cut me a break. That was not going to work.
Right.
So let's start with Sean Penn, okay? He had been known for Taps, which was a year earlier. And that's can you imagine? That's a very different.
That's a swing.
Taps
that's
to
a big swing.
This laid-back surfer dude.
Yeah.
What's his name, everybody?
Jeff Spicoli.
Very
I mean,
good.
Is he? I'm going to throw this word around a couple of times in this hour. Jeff Spicoli is an icon.
Oh, yes.
Oh, for sure.
100% an icon.
I would venture to say that's what put it on the map in terms of we started to use those terms, the dude and the bogus and totally
bogus.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't on our radar at all before. I mean, he kind of introduced, or this character did, a whole
a lexicon.
Yeah, that
totally.
Smart
yeah.
word from Kristen.
Gnarly.
He 100% dedicated himself to this role, okay?
Yeah.
He approached it with a method acting approach. He was Jeff Spicoli the entire time of filming.
They didn't
even let him call – he did not let them call him Sean, even when they weren't rolling, like, you know, filming or whatever. He dressed like him. He talked like him. He 24/7 was
that.
Jeff Spicoli. I just thought that was real dedication. And it's not like he had done a lot of movies prior or anything. I mean, this is like dedication from a young actor. And so speaking of dedication in terms of what they brought to the role, we're going to talk about Jennifer Jason Leigh for a minute. So that was everybody. Who was that?
Stacy.
Breakout role for Jennifer Jason Leigh and really launched her career. And to truly understand the character, she actually worked at a local pizza place for a while and immersed herself in the world of being a teenage employee, which, by the way, let's just take a little moment to say that was a whole thing in the 80s, being a fast food employee. Now, I don't know. I can't remember. I don't think either of you two can relate to being in a polyester Burger King outfit trying to hold the pickle and the lettuce while they're yelling it out to you. But yeah, that was a whole thing and a whole like subculture. Like you could have a whole life at your fast food restaurant job and the people, and you go to your high school, and it's a whole different thing.
I was obsessed with those Perry's Pizza uniforms.
Oh, yeah.
I love that they got to wear those because it's like, it looked almost like they worked at Disneyland.
Yeah.
They had
like
little pink puffy sleeves and they all had white tights, but I loved the pink. Little pink dresses
yeah, that
with puffy
was cute
sleeves.
Because the Burger King outfit,
right?
It was kind of bell-bottom polyester, and it was brown.
Oh,
and
it was
it had
brown
like orange
and poopy,
yellow.
Poopy
and
yellow.
Think about what the poor hot dog on a stick people had to wear.
Yes.
Those giant hats.
Mm-hmm. It was
They're
very
so
much like.
Ridiculous.
What was that? Those
Remember how tall those hats were? They were striped. And they were like mustard yellow and like
red. Oh my God,
red,
it's so humiliating.
They had the giantest hats on.
It's food court culture, right? It's like the food court was, that's fast food culture.
Yes. But I thought Jennifer Jason Leigh was very believable in her character. Mm-hmm. What about
she was,
you guys?
So, she was
believable.
Yeah, I did too. She was very naive and very, but very like eyes wide open and wanting to take all these risks. But at the same time, she played that younger, almost younger sister to, well, she was a younger sister, but younger sister almost to Linda very well.
Like clamoring for
like
information.
She was
Yes. Mm-hmm. But what she didn't do was show the other side of the vulnerability of it. So to me, she was, from the first time I saw it, I've found her an unlikable character. I've always been ambivalent about that character. And you know that she's stepping in it. You know that she's making big mistakes. You know that she's doing it with a sense of naivete. You know that she's doing it to keep up with Linda. And yet you never see the vulnerability. You only see her like plowing forward as if she knows exactly what she's doing.
I would maybe beg to differ a little bit.
Really? Just, okay.
Especially when she is a younger sister, like her relationship with her brother.
That felt super.
Yes. Like she was vulnerable and she was young at that point. She was like not that want to know everything, be like Linda girl. So I felt like we did see a little bit of that in that scene. And also, sadly, in the, and this was probably as an adult now watching it again, but the scene where she is having sex for the first time with the audio guy or whatever.
The audio salesman.
The audio salesman. And that, it, where she almost looks like she disassociates from
totally.
The, that seemed very... real as well and kind
that
of
was,
vulnerable.
That was real.
Seeing that as an adult
was hard. And at the end, we're going to talk about that. How did you see this differently now? Because Kristen, how you said you didn't, she wasn't as likable to you. I have, there's one particular scene I want to talk about in a little bit, but I do agree that I feel differently towards Stacy as an adult.
Yeah.
As I did as a kid. You know that this movie didn't get the greatest reviews. Roger Ebert didn't really like the movie, but he loved Jennifer Jason Leigh. He basically was like, she's going to like keep your eye on this one type of thing.
Wow. I can tell you one person I was not irritated by, and this would be Judge Reinhold.
Hey, everybody.
Judge played Brad. Okay. And this was his first major role. Okay. And thank God is all I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, because I loved Judge Reinhold in this movie and realized right now, as I was watching it again, that there was a little foreshadowing going on here because my husband has been repeatedly told that he looks like Judge Reinhold.
Oh, I can see it. Yeah, a little
and bit. And so I think there was this attraction from the first time I saw him on the screen where I was kind of drawn to Judge Reinhold, and now it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And he was awesome at this in this role. And
he's
you know
so
what?
Good.
He the reason he was asked to play Brad, he was Amy Heckerling's upstairs neighbor in Los Angeles. I guess, you know, he fit what she thought this character would look like and be like, and lo and behold, he got cast. So if he had not lived in that apartment above her, who knows?
Was he an actor? And lived above her? Okay, so he was at least an actor. Yes, he is so beloved. He is Stacy's older brother. He's sort of the older brother to the whole movie. And I only ever, no matter what movie or show he is in for the rest of my life, I only ever see him in a pirate hat. No matter what role he plays, I see him playing it in a pirate hat.
Yeah, and then when I was watching it and telling Grace I was going to watch it, she said, is that where the guy from Santa Claus that plays the stepdad,
oh
is
my
that
God.
Him? I mean, like our kids know who Judge Reinhold is from the Disney movie.
Oh, yeah. The original Santa Claus is like one of our family favorites. We watch it every year. And yeah, Judge plays Neil, and he's the one who has always wanted a weenie whistle for Christmas, remember?
He evolved really well in his career. And then another you know, iconic Gen X movie being Beverly Hills Cop.
Which is when
a lot of people fell in love with him again. So, but I was an OG, and then I married his doppelganger. So there we go. Okay, then we have our favorite Martian, Ray Walston, as the iconic Mr. Hand. I say the word iconic a lot, but there's a lot of iconic things in
this
movie.
It's deserved. So it's deserved.
Yes, it really is.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Hand.
I loved Mr. Hand.
I did too.
Well, I hated him, but I loved him. But
well, he played him so well.
He did play him so well.
Yeah. And I would say Mr. Hand is as important a role for his career as my favorite Martian in terms of how do I identify him, right? Mr. Hand is as iconic as my favorite Martian. Spicoli needed a foil, and Mr. Hand was the perfect yin to his yang. They were such a great couple.
Yeah.
Yes. And didn't we all have a high school teacher like that? Like the old school, you know, just these are the rules. And
yes,
you know,
everything's black
second
and white.
The door gets locked. And so, again, we could relate to that stereotypical high school old fashioned old school kind of.
like you said at the beginning, again, when we're talking coming of age, Mr. Yep. Hand as well.
Yeah.
He kind of evolves in yep. his character and grows, I would say.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you appreciate him and you see in his odd, like, odd curmudgeonly way, there's a kindness that he does by the end of the movie. And you're like, oh, I didn't know he had that in him. Mm-hmm. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, another great character. So what actress to you and character is the most memorable when it comes to Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
Phoebe Cates.
Phoebe Cates, yeah.
Phoebe Cates is
hands
right.
Down.
And I'm going to go ahead and speak for my husband and say, okay. yeah, Phoebe Cates.
Phoebe Cates. Gay, straight, bi, it doesn't matter, Phoebe Cates.
Right. And I will tell you that my husband, until last night, had never seen Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
What?
I know. Can you believe it?
Wow.
But he could.
It's his favorite movie now.
Well, he knew that scene. Like, that scene stands oh. apart from the movie yes. itself. He's like, Phoebe Cates, topless, you know, cool.
We're going to talk about this scene several times throughout this discussion. And so we'll just lay it out for you right now. It is the most iconic scene in this movie, and it is one of the most iconic scenes in film. Because to your point, Andy knows this scene, even though he's never seen the movie, and that mm-hmm. is Brad's masturbatory fantasy of Phoebe Cates getting
my
out
gosh,
of the
what
pool.
A great word. Also, can I just say she had great boobs.
Beautiful.
She had great boobs.
Yeah.
Lovely.
But let's go back to – can we just go back to a second to the teen exploitation, that mm-hmm. this one's real. Even that scene, which I think if we're going to put one scene in particular that maybe straddles the line between – is it coming of age or is it teen exploitation? Mm-hmm. I still am going to bump it into coming of age because it was done so well. It was so well. Real.
It yes. was. And it was a fantasy scene. This yes. was not really happening. This is what was happening
also,
in Brad's head.
But that's so real.
Exactly.
Our senior in high school,
100%.
Who his sister's best friend happens right. to be Phoebe Cates.
Right, which why yeah. I don't think it's any kind of
it wasn't
exploitation
of her. Yeah. No, it was
and
done
that's
really
the brilliance,
well, yeah.
right? That's the dividing line right now. If that had been a real scene in the movie, we would not be talking about it in the same way. What makes
right.
it authentic
exactly.
is that this is only
right.
happening in Brad's head.
Right. Which is so authentic.
It's so
for an
authentic.
18-year-old boy. Yeah.
When I was recently visiting Michelle, we happened to call up a video on YouTube of Phoebe Cates being interviewed by David Letterman. And we're going to put that in our weekly reader, you guys, because let's just say it's kind of painful. We felt really
it's
bad for David
awkward.
Letterman.
She's a terrible interviewee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was
like,
not a natural industry person.
No, mm-hmm. Not at all. So that after watching that interview and then watching the movie again, I actually looked at her a little differently from yeah. after that interview. But one of the things I read that I thought was super interesting was as much as she agreed to do the scene, she was 19 when she did this movie. So she had say, and she actually talked to her parents. Mm-hmm. They couldn't say don't do it, but she agreed to do it. But you know, there was some trepidation about the nude scene. And Amy Heckerling assured her that the shot of her topless would only last a few seconds and that after the people saw it on there, nope, it's done, it's gone.
Oh,
but of course, we didn't think about VHS and how things would live forever. And evidently, workers at video stores would often say that the rental copies would start flickering during that
God.
Scene due to having been paused at that topless moment so many times.
I love that.
I'm sure there are a lot of people
of
nodding
course.
In agreement.
Yes.
Males
just,
and females.
Yes. She does say that, David. Also, let's give her, you know, we were giving her a hard time. Like, oh, this is so yeah. awkward. But she was only 19 and probably,
right.
this was
yes.
probably one of her first press.
And David Letterman can be a little intimidating, I would
sure.
think, to be.
She's totally aided. You guys have to watch this in the Weekly Reader. She has, Carolyn and I are like, did she lose an earring? Oh, no. She's just wearing one giant earring.
Yeah.
And there's
oh,
a little
sure.
stud
like
in the other ear because it's 1982.
Yeah.
But he's like joking kind of about the topless part, which I was getting a little creeped out by
Ooh,
him talking
okay.
to her about it.
Yeah.
But she's like, I loved it. It was great. Yeah. She's like, and yeah. she said kind of what the three of us just said, because she said it worked so well in that scene. It worked mm-hmm. so well.
Okay. I want to share a fun list of facts with you about the casting. Okay. So Nicolas Cage, who we all know, he actually auditioned for the role of Brad Hamilton Thank you, casting gods, that did not happen. But he wasn't cast in that role due to his age. So he was the only, like, probably true high schooler age cast member because he's in some scenes. But here is what's interesting about him. In the movie, he's credited as Nicholas Coppola. So mm-hmm. we know that he is Francis Ford Coppola's nephew. Mm-hmm. And he wanted everybody on set to know that. And evidently, he brought it up a lot.
Oh,
a lot that he was really annoying. And so the cast started to haze him a little bit. And Francis Ford Coppola, for those of you who might not remember, directed the movie Apocalypse Now. And there's a famous line in there that Robert Duvall says, "I love the smell of napalm in the morning." And to kind of get back at Nicholas, they would say to him, "I love the smell of Nicholas in the morning instead." And they would go around and taunt him with this quote. And the hazing worked because, and as we know, Nicholas Coppola is now Nicholas Cage. And that is why he changed his name. Because of the hazing he received on the set of Fast Times at Ridgemont
High. So here he was trying to ride the coattails, and that totally backfired on him.
Hello, listeners. If you've been listening for the past few months, you know that I've been experimenting with a new clothing rental membership from Armoire. After the pandemic, I fell into the routine of pretty much not getting dressed at all. Ever. I basically had nighttime pajamas and daytime pajamas, and it was a habit that was so hard to break when it was time to start leaving our houses again. Was I comfortable? Yes, but did I look like me? Not really. That's where I thought Armoire might be helpful for me. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. My membership has helped me build a better wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and look a lot more like me than my pajamas did. Is comfort still a priority? 100%. That's one of the things I'm learning as I experiment with new styles. There are clothes out there that feel like pajamas, but I still look like I got dressed in the morning. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then, when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. Right now, our listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/PCPS. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/PCPS, to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
Recently, I was visiting Michelle in Denver, and you guys, I was so impressed how seriously she takes the meals that she makes for her new dog.
It's true. Yeah. Our pup, Frankie, is a 2-year-old Australian cattle dog, mixed rescue. And since I imagine she probably ate nothing but weeds on the farm she came from, I want to give her the best and tastiest nutrition possible. And that's why I feel so good about giving Frankie Badlands Ranch. Actress Katherine Heigl, she's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation. She says she's seeing more issues with dogs' health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health, their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs, and it's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And bonus, Badlands Ranch also supports the Jason DeBus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes, just like Frankie. And I'm here to tell you, Frankie loves it and gets so excited when she sees me reach for the bag.
We have a great offer that we are excited to share with all of our dog parent listeners. Go to badlandsranch.com/PCPS and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/PCPS today.
Hi, everyone. This is Michelle, and I want to talk to you about my post-menopause symptoms. TMI? Not with this audience. Listen, for what seems like 92 years, I've been waking up in the night with a wet pajama top. I know a lot of you know that feeling. I've experienced mood swings, bloating, racing thoughts. Basically, I've felt like I'm living in a body that's not mine.
but I'm so happy to report that all of that is changing since I started taking Hormone Harmony. I've noticed a huge improvement in all of those things I just listed. And you guys, I've even weaned off the hormone patches I've worn for the past 6 years. And I'm not the only one who's loving it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds, and there are over 17,000 reviews where women mention that Hormone Harmony has helped them feel like themselves again. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PCPS for 15% off today. Don't you want to feel like yourself again?
Another fun fact. This was the film debut for Eric Stoltz and an early role for Anthony Edwards and Forrest Whitaker. Now, Anthony and Eric were best friends growing up in Santa Barbara, so it was kind of cool they were in this.
I didn't know that.
I know. I didn't know it either till I watched a cute little video on YouTube where Anthony Edwards is interviewed, and he shares that. Hmm. And he also shares how it is not lost on him and many fans that, of course, when we first see him in the movie Fast Times at Ridgemont High, iconic scene, and he's removing his shirt. So we see him shirtless in the movie. Then fast forward to his next probably iconic role for many of us is Goose, and he's Goose in Top Gun. And he is the only character in the beach volleyball scene that is wearing a shirt.
Oh!
And I don't know. I would wonder, was that on purpose? Another casting that would have totally ruined the movie, I think, is originally Fred Gwynn, Herman Munster, was offered the role of Mr. Hand. Okay, what was that about, people?
That works, but it's a different role entirely.
Well, it is.
It's a different role.
And
I can see it, you guys.
I can still see it.
Yeah.
I guess because when I see Fred Gwynn, I see Herman Munster.
Yes, right.
So it was a hard switch. I mean, I probably could if I was just looking at regular Fred Gwynn.
Here's a few more. I love almost cast stories. And this is going to start to sound like a who's who of 1981 for you guys. I'm going to go down these pretty quickly. Tom Hanks was considered for the role of Brad Hamilton.
I like it.
But think back. I'm agreeing too. Yeah. Do you guys remember that young, curly-haired, moppy-haired Tom Hanks? He could have done a good job.
Can't you see him taking off that pirate hat and just throwing it on the ground?
You know, we love Judge Reinhold in the role, but we would have loved a young Tom Hanks in that role as well. I like this one too. Justine Bateman, who you guys know I looked up to. Like, she was my fashion icon. We talked about that before. Was offered the Phoebe Cates role of Linda, but she turned it down to star in Family Ties. Talk about a win-win for both of them.
Totally. Yes. And I think that would have worked. It's not the same iconic thing, but it would have worked.
Well, I haven't seen her boobs yet, so I can't tell you. But I think, here's one I can't see. Matthew Broderick was offered the role of Jeff Spicoli, and he turned it down.
No.
I don't see that.
Absolutely not.
No.
No. Jodie Foster is said to have been considered for the role of Stacy.
At first I went, no. But then I was like, well, maybe it would have been better. Maybe she would have been able to give me what I didn't like in Jennifer Jason Leigh.
And then three others who auditioned but were not cast, Ally Sheedy, Meg Tilly, and Ralph Macchio.
I can actually
see that there's a role for all three of those people in that movie. Ralph Macchio, I think he could have been Rat.
Totally could have been Rat. Yes.
Right?
And
totally.
I love Rat, but Ralph Macchio would have been perfect also.
And I think Ally Sheedy would have been a great Stacy.
Yes. Oh, that's perfect. And again, I would have gotten that more sympathetic character that I was looking for with Ally Sheedy.
And Meg Tilly as well.
Yeah. Agreed.
So we know that you all listening know this movie like the back of your hand.
Your hand.
So we know it's not necessary to walk you through the story, but we also know this movie is full of scenes that have lived in your brain, like we always say, rent-free, for 42 years. Because you can't talk about this movie without remembering these iconic scenes. So we wanted to know what the memorable scenes to you all listening were. So like any good investigators, of course, we took to the social medias and asked you, our listeners and followers, what one scene you will always think of when you think of Fast Times. But first, Kristen, what one scene will you always think of? Like right away, the first one.
I thought there was only one scene in this movie.
Andy did.
Boobs.
That was the movie.
And so when we asked people on social media, I was like, why are we even asking? Because they're only going to have one answer.
Weren't you surprised?
I was so surprised. Yeah. I couldn't believe how diverse the answers were. Of course, I'm talking about Phoebe Cates getting out of the pool. I was like, what scenes? What other scenes? Yeah. It's just burned on my retinas. And of course, again, we're talking about Brad's masturbatory fantasy of Phoebe Cates getting out of the pool in her red bikini, taking off her red bikini top. Is it exploitive? Yes, that is a lot of boob. But like you said, it's perfect boob. But it's so perfectly crafted that you can't look away and you're changed forever after. It's like Farrah Fawcett, male, female alike, gay, straight, or bi. You can't look away. Yeah. And it has its own soundtrack, which we are going to talk about a little bit later. The soundtrack of the scene elevates the movie and makes it oh so cinematic, which again cements it in your brain. And hello, I'm 14 years old, which we all know is the age at which music and feelings go together to stay with you forever and ever. And then that beautiful cinematic moment collapses spectacularly when the real life intrudes on the fantasy and Phoebe Cates' Linda walks in on Brad pleasuring himself to fantasies of her. It's so full circle.
What about you, Carolyn? Is that your same scene?
Well, how can we not say that scene?
I mean, but I have a different one.
I mean, I would maybe say a different one now after watching it as an adult, but before it would have been that scene. But even a narrower part of it, I just remember specifically him looking out the window. Not even as much her boob. Like, I know what she's looking at, but his little face, and he's got that little sliding glass window in the, I'm guessing, the bathroom open, and he's just looking, then he slowly closes it. I remember that. And you know why? I think I'm not exactly sure the first time I saw the movie that I quite understood what was happening the bathroom.
No. 100% no for me. Yeah.
But yeah, it was him looking out that sliding little window.
Was doing something like sexual. I had no idea what it was. But again, like I said about like earlier, my number one scene will always be the cafeteria and the carrots. And because I did not – it stayed with me because I sort of felt embarrassed that I didn't know what they were doing and what's happening. And then that's where I found out that she says she was 13 the first time she did it. And I'm like all full of angst at that scene. And then when I find out what they're doing, probably the next year when friends tell me, I'm like mortified that that's something that people do.
Yes.
So for me though, that was when I learned what a BJ was, and another reason made me petrified to grow up. Well, and I can remember, and this has to have been one of the first times I saw it, when she says, don't use your teeth. And I can remember thinking, well, how are you going to eat the carrot? What? Don't use your teeth? That doesn't make any sense. Maybe if it's a banana, but you kind of, they're necessary for a carrot,
how do you
Linda.
Eat the carrot? Oh, gosh. So after our very scientific poll on social media, here are some of the scenes our listeners will never forget. And it was surprising because, again, we thought it would just be one scene that people would say. So 70s Podcast says, easy! Exclamation point. Is there a better scene than moving in stereo by the cars, playing with Brad, quote unquote, watching Linda exit the pool? So at least, right, the first comment is right on brand with what the rest of us are saying. Wendy Ahrens says, Brad in the car wearing the pirate hat. Same. He'll always be wearing
the pirate hat. That's so great, you guys. And he's so cocky. Hey, babe.
So Lala Fafa, la, 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 la. I don't know how to say that. She says, when Jennifer Jason Leigh with her strangely frizzy hair and knowing/awkward smirk is in science class and the monkey in a cage grabs her finger, I thought that might happen to me someday. Why? Why did you?
I know, but wait, and then she goes on to say, I still think it might.
Why?
But I did love, speaking of hair, though, that brought me back to the 80s was the little like half French braids. There were a lot of French braids in this movie with like a little ribbon intertwined in it.
And so many roach 80s. Clips. Oh, so my many God. Roach clips in the hair. Yeah.
You guys, I used to wear those. You could buy them at like the mall, right? In like the type of, I don't know if it was Claire's, but it was Spencer's or whatever. Yep. But we would all put them in our hair. And I probably wore it for a whole year before like my stepfather or someone was like, why do you have a roach clip in your hair? And I was like, what's a roach clip? And when he told me what it was, I was probably 12. I was horrified.
Why are we all doing this?
Does that mean everybody thinks that's for my weed, my marijuana?
Your grass.
My joint.
My pot. My doobie.
Yeah.
But when I just said my grass, I remember my sister and her friend, they were like in elementary school, they once took a paper towel and they went out the backyard and they got a bunch of grass and they rolled it in the paper towel. They were young enough to think this was a thing. And then it just like caught on fire.
That's how you smoke grass.
Yeah. Or burn your house or burn your backyard down.
Right. Burn your bangs. Valerie RP71 says, has to be, this is such a Gen X moment, you guys, has to be when Mr. Hand passes out test papers to the class and they all smell it. They all take the mimeograph sheets and they go.
And we all can smell it right now. Yeah, and it's kind of damp. It's kind of damp a little bit.
Especially if it was, just done.
Yeah.
Like a lot of my teachers were running in from the teacher's workroom.
Totally. Like they're almost late and they're running in with papers. Exactly. And you're like,
and the ink is almost like kind of purple.
And then remember taking it and like kind of waving it. You pass it out and they're kind of cold and damp and you like wave it a little bit.
It smells so good.
Mm-hmm. Green Sweater 27 says, the scene where Brad covers for his friend who has to use the bathroom, then has the altercation with the customer, and then gets fired as he's leaving. This is so funny. As he's leaving, he bangs on the restroom door and yells, I hope you had a hell of a piss, Arnold. You can just hear him saying it, right?
Also, I mean, huge props, and that's such a weird thing. If my girls aren't listening to this, but they would die that I said props. But to Cameron Crowe for the writing of this movie.
Oh, my God.
It is so well and hysterically written.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That scene in particular, the whole
scene.
The breakfast, wanting to return the breakfast, and he just keeps pointing to the sign. It's just, it's so good.
I was
so
not
good.
Satisfied.
It is comedy, like, at its finest. 100%
of your ass.
That's like our, that's Gen X comedy too. All of us. I'm speaking for all of us. I know we are. That is our kind of comedy that we still love to this day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And think about it. It's not profane. It's what a teenager would actually say. It's just a little more clever and more comedic. Yeah. But it is what we're thinking, and we need somebody to say it better for us. And Cameron Crowe, that was his gift.
Oh, that's good. So good.
So Jude Jasp says, Brad throwing, I'm going to laugh at each one of these. Brad throwing the pot of coffee on the guy robbing the mini mart and getting major props from Spicoli. He goes, awesome. Totally awesome. Way to go, Hamilton.
I just stand
that by the bathroom.
I think that was another part of the lexicon that came out of this that we started to use, like, awesome. Totally.
Everything was awesome.
Totally awesome.
And now and it stayed so hard that sometimes I have difficulty finding a different word to use besides awesome. This is 40 years later. We're still saying awesome. And I think you're right. Before Spicoli, it may have been out there, but it wasn't part of the everyday lexicon. Totally awesome. Stayed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be, and we're going to say it on our deathbeds. We're going to be like, this life was totally awesome. Thanks, Spicoli.
That's what Spicoli's gravestone should say. This life was awesome.
Yeah.
Totally awesome.
Totally awesome. Way to go, Hamilton. So Skulls and Swords says, the scene with Damone teaching Rat the rules of dating, for sure. I used Damone's 5-point plan on dozens of dates throughout my teenage years because of that scene. Really, Skulls and Swords? You thought that was a good idea?
And was that successful?
I want a report.
I'm going to remind everyone real quickly. The 5-point plan is 1, never let on how much you like a girl. 2, always call the shots. 3, act like wherever you are, that's the place to be. 4, when ordering food, you find out what she wants, then order for the both of you. It's a classy move. And 5, Now, this is the most important, Rat. When it comes down to making out, whenever possible, put on side one of Led Zeppelin 4.
You know that Skulls and Swords was not the only one to do that. They took that seriously, and they're like, okay, I've got to go find that 8-track of Led Zeppelin. Yeah.
And then our friend Shane, who is 87 Ragged Tiger, I kind of think he wins. He said, as a 13-year-old with a crush on Judge Reinhold, you do the math.
I'm going to have to arm wrestle you for him, okay, yeah, Shane? Right. Besides favorite scenes, you guys, most of the responses, a lot of them, included quotes from the movie. Maybe. Because like many of our favorite iconic 80s movies, Fast Times is chock full, and I mean full, of lines that we cannot forget. And when we think of memorable scenes, we just automatically know the quotes in them. It's like you can't separate them, okay? Mm-hmm. So what do you think made the quote so memorable?
Well, I think Cameron Crowe was able to do dialogue like nobody else. And remember, he spent a year embedded in a high school just writing down everything that everybody said. And so he was able to take those things that are very real, but he's a writer. So now he's going to punch it up and he's going to make it clever. So they weren't outrageous. And like I said, they weren't profane. They just say what we want to say, but funnier.
Mm-hmm. Right. And isn't that what movies are about? It's those great lines, but by themselves, they're great and kind of funny if you're reading his book. Mm-hmm. But when you pair that with the actor who can put the facial expressions with it, or the accent or whatever, it's like this magical chemistry that happens, and it's bingo. And I think that's often what we see on the screen in really well done films. And we can I know we all have them. What are the quotes that have stuck in your brains and you still remember today?
This is one that has stuck in my head for 42 years. I didn't even know it was from this movie until I watched it this week. It was just always with me. And then when I rewatched it, I realized the reason that it stuck with me is because it contrasts two very awkward scenes. So mine is from Damone's 5-point plan that you just laid out for us. For picking up girls, and he's trying to be all cool, and he's trying to teach his nerdy friend Rat how to score with the ladies. So Damone is the Linda in the relationship with Rat, right? That's who Damone is. And he tells Rat, like you just said, in a restaurant, you should always find out what the girl wants and then do the ordering for the both of them. And he models it for him. And this is what has been in my head for 42 years. The lady will have linguine with clam sauce and a Coke with no ice. Why? Why? But then you fast forward, and Rat is on his real date with Stacy, and they're at this very fancy restaurant and they're sitting in these giant chairs that make them look like little children.
And that waitress, it looks so giant.
And
when
she's giant. She's the grown-up.
That was done so intentionally.
So intentionally, to make them look like they are no business being there doing these grown-up things. And Rat says, she'll have the knockwurst. it's just not sexy. It's not cool. It's so perfect.
Yeah. Well, similarly to you, Kristen, when I heard the line, it's a line I've been using a lot, probably ever since the movie came out, but I at some point forgotten that this is from the movie. And when I saw it, I was like, well, now it all makes sense.
Yes,
because it's
just
one
like
of
me.
The first, it's when I think we first see Judge Reinhold on the screen, and he's in work at the All American Burger, and he takes the big fryer and he dumps the French fries in the garbage can, and he says, "I shall serve no fries before their time." And I will say that not always with fries, be like, "I'll serve no noodles before their time," or as I'm throwing things into the trash. And when he said it, it's like, well, no wonder it's Judge. It's my future husband saying something funny and dumping these fries in. And then when I heard it on there and saw him saying it, I was, oh my gosh, that's where it's from.
It's like your whole life makes sense now.
Yes, exactly. Yes, exactly. Exactly. And so our listeners had some fun quotes to share.
For It's Me, Regina D, it's when Brad says, "Learn it, know it, live it." She says she's been saying that line for years. It's one of the first things you hear in the movie, and it's our introduction to Brad. Brad, he's the big brother of the whole movie, and it gives us the perfect soundbite to sum him up as the responsible older brother.
Right. And that's coming right after the no shirt. no shoes.
No dice.
He's like, what does it say? My shoe, no shoes, no dice. And he's like, learn it, know it, live it. My Foothills Fixer coming in with perhaps one of the most favorite that we got. All I need is some tasty waves, a cool buzz, and I'm fine.
Good job.
And what about basically every scene with Mr. Hand, right?
Uh-huh. Right.
In the past almost four years, it's crazy, we've been doing this podcast, we've rewatched many movies that we loved when they first came out. And while many of them are just as good as we remember, I'd say more than several of them either don't hold up in today's world or we see them very differently through our 50-something-year-old eyes. So what did you guys think of Fast Times after watching it this past week? Did it hold up? Did you see it differently?
Both. And
yeah.
Yes, okay. It definitely holds up as long as you're ready to examine or accept how we viewed pregnancy and abortion as children, right? I would argue that they're pretty cavalier about the whole thing. Juvenile. They're quite juvenile because they are children. They're children. You see Damone trying to be responsible and trying to get the money for Stacy's abortion. But when he can't, he just ghosts her.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But that's because he's a kid. He doesn't have the capacity to process this with any kind of integrity because he's a kid. And also, we had no information in 1982. We didn't talk about these things. We took things like this very cavalierly. But I don't know, but I feel like our kids have so much more information that they wouldn't be so cavalier, that they would take it more seriously. I don't know. Is that a pipe dream? Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I think it's true. I think we've come a long way in education and just, I would hope in just like the acceptance of talking about it. I actually can tell you, answer my question right there and say, no, I know we haven't come very far at all. Yeah.
But there's no birth control anywhere. Right. And that would be different today. There's zero birth control.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And I think because these movies started to have these topics as subject matter, we started talking about it more amongst ourselves, and that we maybe grew up to become parents who were maybe a little more open with our children than our parents would have been with us.
Absolutely.
And so depending on how you parented, I think the situation could be very different now because you would have maybe discussed these things with your kids and saying, what if, you know, you're ever in a situation, no matter what, you can come to me, I won't judge. At least that's kind of how I did it. So I'd like to think that my kids would have approached this a little differently than it happened in the movie. But I think maybe it's because we were the first generation of real parents that maybe addressed this a little more openly with our
and maybe
kids.
Because Amy Heckerling made movies like this.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think our kids would be horrified that these kids are just having sex without any thought to birth control. I think that's an unheard of thing in today. And again, I hope I'm right. I hope I'm not just fantasizing about that.
Who knows?
Yeah, no, right. And I was thinking of more the situation they were in, but you're right, because the situation can still happen with birth control.
Sure.
But I agree with you. I think it holds up. I will tell you that watching it at age 55 versus age 13, my differences were like when I was young and watched this, I liked Stacy until she is in the pool house and she's basically like, we're doing this because he always, to me, sort of felt like hesitant, like
with Damone. She's with Damone.
Damone. Always felt a little hesitant, and it's sort of like, now listen, let's be real. He makes the choice to do it. But I kind of stopped liking her in, 82, 83, 84, whenever I would watch it. Like, oh, you're fast, you know? Or like,
bad for Rat.
Oh, so bad. Yes, so bad. Yes, she was like, she wasn't his girlfriend, but at the same time, that's just,
mad at Damone for.
So I didn't like her then, right? Mm-hmm. Now, watching it now, there was still definitely the element of, what are you doing? That's Rat's best friend. But I also, having now gone through all the teen years and the 20 years and everything I went through with my own kind of like sexual growth, I could see her as that was kind of her Hail Mary. Like, she's talked with Linda, who she admires. 13 years old. Shit, I'm way behind. I just need to do this and get it over with. I'm going to try with this nice boy, Rat. He's not interested. Who else is here? Oh, him. He looks cute. Yeah. And I could feel more like sympathy or empathy for her at just like, I need to do this and get it out of the way.
She's right? trying so hard to keep up. She's trying to keep yeah. up. And that so, is, I agree with you. With my adult eyes, I recognized her in that way where I didn't see her that way when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. She's trying so hard to keep up when she doesn't have to. And it's because of Linda painting this picture for her right. of what you're supposed to do when you're a teenager. But Linda's picture is not accurate. Stacy doesn't know that the picture isn't
exactly.
accurate.
All
so
that.
Then you
yep.
feel then you feel bad for Stacy that she's trying so hard to keep up. Like, honey, you don't have to do that.
Right.
It's a companion conversation to our Carnival Sandy Cardigan Sandy. Is
totally.
It her expressing her sexuality, or is it her feeling pressure to keep up? Well, and we find out at the end of the movie, that's not her natural. She's not embracing her sexuality. She's just right. trying to keep up.
No, right. because you see that, like, when in the little postscript that they've been dating for a year and they still haven't had sex.
Yeah, they're yeah. passionate mm-hmm. lovers.
Yeah, right. so she just was looking for love, and she was yeah. misguided a little bit by Stacy that this is all the things I'm supposed
by
to
Linda.
Do.
Yeah.
By
mm-hmm.
Linda, sorry. Yeah. yeah. And so I feel like I got that more as an adult than I did as a kid.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I can say that I think I got that to some extent while I was watching the movie. I feel like I was experiencing a lot of those things that those characters were feeling. And so when I watched this again, there was a lot of melancholy that I was oh. kind of feeling because I remembered those feelings that they were having very specifically. And I remember having those when I saw the movie. In a way, it was just kind of mirroring my very own experiences at the time. And watching it again, like, that's not something I really revisit. Or, yeah. You know, it's not like I would have any opportunity to really go back to that. But when I'm watching someone else experience that, and I remember watching the first time I saw that person experiencing that, if that makes sense, and how the Carolyn then was feeling, those kind of feelings came back up. That was surprising to
oh,
me. Like
wow.
I saw the movie a little differently than just for the plot and the scenes I remember.
It, it was too personal.
It was. It mm-hmm. really was. And it did take me till this age to kind of realize with clearer vision that I was kind of watching myself in some ways. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that can have its moments and makes you take pause.
And that really,
that's what I did.
That's really interesting. So that's the story that Amy Heckerling was really telling.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really get that at the mm-hmm. time. But that
right.
is truthfully the story she was telling.
Exactly.
Is your story. Your story.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. so many people's story. I mean,
yeah.
that's also what makes movies and these experiences so validating is that, oh, I wasn't the only one. Like, they made a whole yeah. movie about this, and this is one of the plot lines. So I'm not crazy. It's not just you, Carolyn, yeah. all by yourself in this world. Like, this is a thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which
yep.
makes you feel a little bit less alone.
She's gonna be somebody's only light, gonna shine tonight. Yeah, she's gonna be somebody's baby tonight.
So, I mean, although so we can look back at this film and we can see so many different things. We can see where it is not congruent to 2024, but how it really does show us a picture of what 1982 was like accurately. We can rest assured that it was a truer depiction of 1980s teen life than a lot of the other teensploitation films of the time. So when 22-year-old Cameron Crowe set out to write a book to give kids like us a voice, he most certainly succeeded. And Amy Heckerling brought it to the screen with such care and authenticity that together they created a classic. She would go on to create Clueless, the classic for the next generation of teens. And Cameron Crowe did not go on to be a novelist. Instead, he went on to be a filmmaker. And those Rolling Stone roots, those music roots, would follow him into music-heavy films like Almost Famous and Singles. But it all started with Fast Times. It's full of all kinds of music references you'd hear from teenagers and the music that we were listening to in 1982. And that is what we will be talking about next week. So stay tuned for an even deeper dive on how the music in this 1980s film cemented it as a teen classic. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.
Like, totally. Today's episode was brought to you by our wonderful Patreon members who take their support of this podcast to the next level and get fun and exclusive bonus content as a thank you. We honestly could not do this without them. And today, we are giving a special shout out to Natalie, Aggie, Sherry, Darcy, Annalisa, Elizabeth, Nina, Lynn, Valerie, Patty, Stephanie, Rochelle, and Mindy. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. And if you would like to learn more about becoming a patron of the Pop Culture Preservation Society, just go to patreon.com and search for us or click the link in our show notes.
And now let's raise our glasses for a toast. Courtesy of the cast of the show, Carolyn wasn't allowed to watch Three's Company. Two good times.
Two happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on truckin', and may the force be with you.